Welcome back, everyone. Episode 9 of the Gridiron Pulse. I'm here today with Carter, as we have an absence in the family, which would be Cole. So it's just going to be us two kind of running the show today. How you doing, Carter?
Pretty good, Jacob. How about you?
Awesome. Doing well myself. Got a lot of good topics to talk about tonight or today. But we're going to go ahead and just start it off with the news from last night. Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves, 4-1, gentleman sweep versus Luka, LeBron, and the Lakers. I got one thing to say here. Ant-Man, Superman, Batman, it don't matter. Timberwolves in 5.
Yeah, I was watching this game last night, and, you know, since the Luka trade, I mean, it was pretty obvious that the Lakers needed a big center, you know, especially in these playoff games, and Rudy Gobert was just licking his chops the whole night. I mean, just dominating on the glasses. He had 27 points and 24 assists, 15 defensive rebounds, 9 offensive rebounds. Just
wow,
absolutely manhandling the Lakers. Ant really didn't have a good game at all. So it was honestly surprising to me to see that, you know, Rudy Gobert was pretty much carrying the Timberwolves. Same with Julius Randle, which I'm just going to go out and say it. I thought the Timberwolves got absolutely fleeced on that Karl-Anthony Towns trade in the offseason, but, you know, just specifically from this Lakers series, you know, Julius Randle, Jaden McDaniels, Ant have just been carrying the Timberwolves through this series. You know, I wish I did a prediction video, because I would have predicted the Timberwolves to beat the Lakers just simply because they just don't have a big man. And the only big man that they have, Jackson Hayes, didn't even play last night, which I don't understand that reasoning at all. You know, it's weird decision by J.J. Redick. And then, you know, on top of that, the last game, he didn't even play, like, his bench in the whole fourth quarter. He just stuck with the starting five, which I thought was just, I don't know, a bold strategy. But clearly it didn't work. Timberwolves take it in 5. I'm definitely rooting for Minnesota to hopefully take down, which I assume would be Golden State. I think they're going to wrap it up. I think it's either tomorrow or Saturday. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think it's going to be Timberwolves, Golden State, and give me early prediction. Give me the Timberwolves 6.
I like that take as well. I'm a big Timberwolves guy, obviously, just because of the boy, Anthony Edwards, Ant-Man. And he didn't have as good of a game last night, but he was pretty much the sole reason that they won the previous game on Monday. He had 43 points, just went absolutely nuclear. But yeah, that was the game where you're talking about J.J. Redick not playing his, or only playing his starters in the fourth quarter. And those guys aren't getting any younger. I mean, Luka's young, but he's clearly struggled with some weight and some conditioning stuff. So it's like, it just looks like they ran out of gas there in that fourth quarter, and the same thing happened in this game. Rudy Gobert went insane, so good that during the halftime show I was watching, Shaq was actually like, this pains me to say, but Rudy Gobert is lighting it up right now. And he was like pretend choking while he was saying it. That was funny. Love me some Shaq. But we can't end this segment without a little bit of LeBron hate. All right. He is 2-12 in his last 14 playoff games. This past game, he scored 5 points in the fourth on 1 of 3 field goals. He had a couple free throws, and then he had 0 in the previous game's fourth quarter. I think Father Time's catching up.
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if next year's LeBron's next, or last year. Obviously, he's not going to come out and say it in a press conference, especially after losing the Timberwolves. I feel like, obviously, with LeBron, there's going to be a farewell tour. But,
yeah,
you know,
he's not even without being paraded around every city in NBA.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of the fourth quarter woes, you know, an interesting stat that I saw last night when I was watching the game, I think, can't remember the exact number, but I think The Timberwolves were plus like 44 points in the fourth quarter, which just absolutely insane. I mean, just completely dominated the fourth quarter in each of these five games. So I definitely think the Lakers, I think they all need to get better condition. I mean, they were just getting whipped around in the fourth quarter. I mean, last night they couldn't even make a shot in the fourth quarter. And on top of that, I mean, if you asked Luka Doncic to guard a chair, he probably wouldn't be able to do it. That man is that man is a fucking cone on defense.
Yeah.
So I think he definitely needs to condition more and get more right and start putting some effort on the defensive side. Maybe Nico Harrison was right that he was too fat, but I don't know. But I wonder how he was feeling last night watching the Lakers get dominated in the fourth
I'm sure
quarter.
he was smiling ear to ear, my friend. I mean, dude, he was like, maybe I did cook in this trade. But yeah, just there's so many clips of just watching Luka getting absolutely blown by. Whether it's Anthony Edwards, Mike Conley, who's seemingly an ageless wonder, or Jaden McDaniels. One of my favorite quotes from Anthony Edwards is, man, y'all got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels. So, I mean, Jaden McDaniels definitely showed up this series, as well as DiVincenzo, Naz Reid, and the rest of the supporting cast for the Timberwolves. They just proved to be much too deep of a team for someone like the Lakers, who's clearly just top heavy. I mean, I know there's so many plus minuses for the bench stats and all that, but LeBron had a negative plus minus when on the court last night, and his team was positive when he was off. I forget what the number was for the negative, but they were plus 8 when LeBron was off the court.
Oof, you
That's really that's all I
just hate
got
to
for
see
that
it.
one.
Just hate to
Yeah,
see it.
it's tough look for the Lakers fanboys, but I've never considered myself one of those, so I was quite happy watching the
Hey,
game last night.
good news for Lakers fans. I mean, the Cowboys start up minicamp here in a few weeks, so they got that to look
Yep.
forward to. And then,
Absolutely.
the Dodgers too. I mean,
Yeah.
two bandwagon fan bases going at it, so good for them.
Yep. And then 2 nights ago, we also had the Pacers Bucks series come to an end. I believe it was another gentleman's sweep by the Pacers 4-1 over the Bucks. And there was a little confrontation at the end of the game between Halliburton's dad and Giannis. So that whole thing, I know it started off, he was holding up a towel with Halliburton's face on it. And then he was just like getting up in the face of Giannis, being super disrespectful. I think Giannis handled it like a champion. He's just like a quiet, humble guy, not really gonna go out of his way to like pick a fight or do anything ridiculous towards someone. And Halliburton's dad was probably just hammered sitting courtside. So he thought he was able to fight like one of the freakiest athletes of our generation. But I'd love to hear your take on that whole scenario.
Yeah, this situation kind of reminded me. I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, Ja Morant's dad kept getting into it on the sidelines. So that's that kind of
Yeah.
reminded me of that situation. But I just think just some of like fans who buy like a $3,000 to $5,000 ticket to go sit at courtside just think that they have all the privilege in the world, which is not true at all. I mean, basketball is really the only sport where you're really like, I guess you could say like close on the action rather than
Yeah.
baseball and football. So I guess these fans, even like parents too, just think that they have all the privilege in the world when they're spending a couple $1,000s on a ticket, thinking that, oh, like, hey, I could go on the floor after the game's over, to support my son, which is not true at all. I mean, no fan after a game is over should be allowed on the grass stadium or turf or basketball court. It's easy as that, because then you're gonna have instances like this where a potential fight breaks out. I mean, the most obvious example is Malice at the Palace with all those fans throwing beer and food at the Indiana Pacers players. I mean, I mean, obviously there hasn't been like instances like that since that, but you know, I just think these fans and these parents are too entitled to where, you know, if they spend a certain amount of money on a ticket, then they're allowed to do whatever they want, you know. And coming from a usher who has worked at sporting events, that's probably the biggest nightmare as an usher is, you know, trying to control these fans who just think, hey, like, I'm going to a game. I'm spending this amount of money on a ticket. Then I can do whatever the hell I want, which is just not true at all. So I just think it's a really bad look on Tyrese Halliburton's dad. But you know, I gained a lot of respect for Tyrese after he basically called out his dad in the post game press conference and basically saying he was in the wrong, which obviously he was. And then, Giannis. You know, I've always respected Giannis. I think he's a real humble guy, especially when he wins. He's not one of those people like Draymond Green who will just get right up in your face and talk trash to you whenever you know the Warriors win. But you know, and regarding Giannis, you know, there's been since that game there's been a lot of, I guess, spark on whether or not he's going to stay with Milwaukee or not. And you know, his future's kind of up in the air, so it should be interesting to see if he stays in Milwaukee or if he requests a trade, which Hawks, go get him.
I know I've seen so many mock trades come across the timeline where it's like the only team is for the Hawks. So I was like,
Twitter GMs
dude,
are real funny people.
Twitter GMs are going off right now. Yeah, I don't know what Giannis's contract situation looks like. I know he signed a Supermax not all too long ago.
Yeah, I think I don't know if his option is up or if his actual contract is up. I don't really know the back end stuff with that, but I just know, you know, his future's kind of up in the air right now with Milwaukee, especially after getting knocked out in the first round, 3 straight years. Him and Dame really haven't
So
worked like at all.
it looks like he's under contract, under actual contract through 2027, and then for 2028 has a player option.
Okay.
So he would be free agent 2029. So I mean, as crazy as that sounds, that's not all too far away. Like,
No.
that's definitely a tradable contract. He's making between 54 to $58 million the next couple of years, which is the Supermax. And I don't know. You can make an argument for Dame Lillard being in the same boat too. I mean, is he washed up? Is he too old? Like he just tore his Achilles at age 35. That's
Yeah.
not going to be a small hurdle to come back from.
I really don't know what the Bucks do if Giannis does ask for a trade in the offseason, 'cause I mean, you're essentially going to be without pretty much Damian Lillard if for the rest of the year next year, if not like a good portion of it. So I honestly really don't know what Milwaukee does, 'cause I mean, the Bucks kind of remind me of the Hawks right now where I mean, granted, Giannis has Dame, Trae Young has Jalen Johnson, but I mean, if you look at the Bucks team, it's literally Giannis, Dame, and then a bunch of just average role players. I mean, I guess you could say Bobby Portis is above average and Brook Lopez, but I mean, that's not really saying too much. I mean, it's the team dynamic is kind of like the Hawks, where you need to give Giannis a lot more help than just
If we were to
Matt.
make a trade for Giannis, I'd want one of those two guys with him. Give me Bobby Portis or Brook Lopez. Lord
Dude,
knows we need some size.
man, I would love Brook Lopez. I mean, the Hawks need a real dynamic shooter at center, 'cause I mean,
Yeah, he's big too. He's like 7 foot, 7 foot 1, and he can stretch the floor with his shot. He's a career 35+, 38+% 3-point shooter. I mean, every time I turn on an NBA game, that dude's just seemingly striping it. I'm like, what are you doing? First of all, you're 7 foot tall. Go down low and get some rebounds. But then he's just like cash every single time. And I'm like, all right, just keep doing
Man,
it. Just keep it up.
I'm old enough to remember when big men would just sit in the paint and not try to be a spot up shooter. But you know, the game has definitely changed since you know
Dude,
we were
remember like
younger.
old Atlanta Hawks Al Horford? And now he's like a 45% 3-point shooter for the Celtics. Like, talk about like extending your longevity in the league by just like getting new skills. Like, you can't coach size and you can't coach speed, but you can coach a jump shot and you can practice enough to make yourself an absolute strap no matter how big or how small you are.
Yeah,
That's
the Celtics are definitely the best in player development. So I don't, I mean, especially with guy like what you said, Al Horford, and then obviously with the dynamic duo of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I mean, they're the best, if not the best, dynamic duo in the NBA right now.
Dynamic duo. I thought you were going to talk about Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser.
exciting whites.
Yeah. Let's
No,
talk about a couple of straps, though. Those guys can shoot the leather off the ball.
Porzingis is a beast too. I mean, he was still good with the Knicks, but I thought he wasn't nearly as good as he is with the Celtics.
Yeah. I think it was 2 games ago in that Magic series when he took an elbow to the face and he
Oh.
was just like bleeding everywhere. He didn't even miss any time. He went to the locker room, put a band-aid on that thing, and just went out and made his free throws. I was like, this guy is a dog.
And Celtics are a wagon, so I don't know who the Celtics play in the second round. I have to double check, but whoever
Is
they
it the
play,
Pacers?
I think it is the Pacers.
I'm
But
clicking through it right now. No,
get
Pacers play Cleveland.
ooh,
So they play the winner of the Knicks.
that's gonna be a good
Yeah, I
series.
think they play the winner of the Knicks and the Pistons. So that's a good segue into our next segment. Just kind of looking ahead for tonight's games. Knicks are up 3-2. They're playing at Detroit, and Detroit's a 1.5 point favorite as of now. I watched quite a bit of this series, honestly, just good old-fashioned physical basketball. I know the refs have clearly just been on the Knicks side, as they usually are for the media darlings, such as the Lakers and the Knicks. But we can look past that. So Detroit's got a chance to tie it up 3-3 at home, then Madison Square Garden for game seven. What's your take on this series here? It's been kind of up and down.
Yeah, it's been one of the more entertaining playoff series this year for the NBA. I'm always someone who loves to root for the underdogs, so I would love to see the Pistons win this series. That, and I just hate the Knicks, so
Yeah, I don't like him either.
I don't like Jalen Brunson. I think he's the biggest flopper in the NBA besides Embiid, but besides the point. But the Pistons, they have a good young team with Cade Cunningham, which. Sorry, buddy. Most improved player was Dyson Daniels, and that was the only player worthy of that pick. You're the number one overall pick. You're supposed to be good, but Cade Cunningham. Tim Hardaway Jr., who's a good 3-point shooter. When he's hitting. Jalen Duren, who's a real nice up and coming center, dominant on the boards, can block shots. Tobias Harris, veteran. Sore Thompson, who I think is one of the better young players in the NBA. Him and his brother both got drafted last year, in the Wimby class. So I think, the Pistons are gonna be good, for the next few years. Good young team. So.
They're definitely a team that looks to be set up for the long haul. I mean, they were like, what did they win, like 20 games last year, and then they won 40 this year. This
Yeah,
year
and
they
they.
went
That and they
44 and
hired,
38.
yeah, and they hired the old Cavs coach from last year, JB
Yeah, JB
Bickerstaff.
Bickerstaff. Yeah. Can't forget my guy, Alpharetta, Georgia legend, Malik Beasley, sixth man of the year. Just at, or he should have been sixth man of the year. Wasn't it Peyton Pritchard?
It was Pritchard.
Yeah, he was second for sixth man of the year, but dude's an absolute strap off the bench. He led the NBA in total 3-pointers made. I thought it was kind of criminal that he didn't win that award, but it's a hometown kid. Our high school
Yeah.
played against him several times. But
Shout
that
out
was
Alpharetta.
Yeah, it's good to see for sure. And then we got the later game is Denver and the Clippers. Denver's up 3-2. This is very similar to the other series. They're up 3-2 at LA tonight. And the Clippers are -6, so 6-point favorites there. I haven't watched too much of this series. I find it hard to stay awake that long for the Western Conference games.
Yeah, I've been watching a decent amount of this series. Last game the Nuggets they manhandled the Clippers, and then the game before that was the Aaron Gordon buzzer beater dunk, which was
Oh,
crazy.
yeah.
This I feel like these two teams are pretty much even. I'd say in talent. I mean, Clippers, you have James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Zubac. Good old friend Bogey, who we traded for Terrence Mann.
Terrible
And
trade.
then actually, I don't know, I'm one of those people who actually didn't mind the trade.
If Terrence Mann is on the team next year, it wouldn't be bad. I don't think we're going to pick him up.
No, and then obviously you got, I mean, this dude needs no introduction, but the Joker, who in my opinion should win MVP over Shea, but no, I don't know if that's really a hot take or not, but
I think he should
Jokic,
too, but he's probably not going to. They don't want to give it to him three times
yeah,
in a row.
it's gonna be voter fatigue. I mean, Shea is a beast, but Joker is just insane what he does as a center. Nuggets got Joker, Jamal Murray, who had a huge game in game five, Michael Porter Jr., who I think that's a guy I think the Hawks are gonna try and get in the offseason this year. He played with Trae Young, I think, on their
Like AAU or high
AAU team.
school. Yeah, high school aged AAU. Yeah.
Michael Porter, Aaron Gordon, who I think he's a good versatile four that can stretch the floor with his shot making, and obviously great dunker too. So and then they got some solid guys off the bench. Christian Brown, who I think is one of the more underrated players in the NBA. I think he's a good piece for them off the bench.
It's an exciting night for sure.
Yeah, this like this I'm honestly, I'm not really sure why the Clippers are favored as high as they are. I don't know if there's really big injury or something, but again, I like to root for the underdogs. I mean, the Nuggets just won the NBA Finals a few years ago, so I am going to go with the Clippers tonight to force a game seven back in Denver.
That would be cool to see a game seven there for sure. I really just like watching Jokic play, so I've been on the Nuggets. I think him paired with Jamal Murray when Jamal Murray's on is like one of the best duos in the NBA. But whenever Jamal Murray's off, it's just Jokic versus the world, it seems like. Just getting cornered every time he gets the ball, chucking up shots from behind his head and just cash. But he's definitely one of the more entertaining players to watch there for sure.
Never forget, bro got drafted during a Taco Bell commercial.
I don't think he's forgotten that either. Back-to-back MVPs should be three, but I agree with you. I think it's going to be Shea due to voter fatigue, and that's it. I mean, this is the first year he's averaged a triple-double, which
That's
is
crazy. I
just
mean,
insane. Shouldn't be possible.
that man, I don't know how just insanely dominant he is at the size that he is. I mean, it's truly awesome to watch.
Yeah,
Joker's definitely
and
one
he's
of my favorite
obviously
players.
not. He's not like Giannis, who's dominant at that size too, who's an athletic freak. He's just kind of like, he's built like a 6'11" regular dude, which is the funniest thing in the world. They got like the slowest pace, but they were third in points per game this year. It's just efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. It's kind of crazy to see that. We can transition on here to the Falcons news, some news that hit our timeline since our last recording of this podcast. Falcons were slapped on the wrist with a $100,000 fine to Jeff Ulbrich and $250,000 to the team for the prank call made by Jeff Ulbrich's son to Shedeur Sanders, saying that he was going to get drafted. What was it? Was that Friday, the second round, or was it a first round pick?
I
I think
think
it
it
was that Tyler
was,
Shuck pick.
yeah. So it was a round two draft pick.
I'm honestly glad that that's all that happened with the amount of dumb stuff that the Falcons organization does. I could have easily seen that costing like a third, fourth, or a fifth round draft pick next year or something of that sort. or like, I don't even know what other kind of punishments they have, but fine. Just don't talk about it anymore. I'm tired of seeing all that crap on the timeline. The Shador stuff, the prank call stuff. Like, first of all, we only got fined because there was a video and it was of Shador Sanders. All this stuff coming out about, like, I don't know, like 30 different players getting prank called throughout the entire draft, happening from night one with Abdul Carter, which I know I saw, all the way to like some fifth round picks and unrestricted free or undrafted free agents, stuff like that. Everyone got prank called. The NFL just needs to do a better job of keeping this information like sealed, because there's no way Jax Ulbrich sent it to a fan of literally every single team. It's like, prank call this guy, prank call this guy. Man, it's another one of those things that I've seen so much, and I'm kind of just like tired of it. Take the penalty, take the fine, and just move on.
Yeah, I'm about sick of it too. I'm tired of seeing it on my Twitter timeline, my Instagram timeline, and it's just unfortunate because I mean, coming off a just a absolute masterclass of a draft. I mean, probably the best I've ever seen from the Falcons, and then of course it wouldn't be the Falcons without getting into some controversy about some stupid stuff. So, it's funny. I saw this Instagram post of the past decade, the amount of stuff that the Falcons have been fined for. I was just going to read this off. So they were fined 350K and a fifth round pick for illegal crowd noise, which was this was a couple years ago when they were still in the Georgia Dome. And then 2 years ago they were fined 75K, and Arthur Smith was fined 25K for an injury report violation on Bijan. I remember that was against Tampa Bay. And I mean, fantasy people were up in arms about that, I remember watching that game. And then last year with the whole tampering thing with Kirk Cousins, we were fined 250K and then lost a fifth round pick. And then of course this year with the prank call. And it's just I mean, it's upsetting as a fan just because like the Falcons just keep getting fined for stupid stuff, and it's the media is more paying attention to that than what's actually happening on the football field, which, of course, and then this year, we have an amazing draft, and all everyone wants to talk about is the prank call. No one's talking about the draft class. And, I'm as a fan, I'm ready to just move on. The Falcons got the punishment that everybody was crying about on Twitter, so all those people can kindly go shut up, and let's go focus back on football.
For real. Like, all the media pundits, all the comment sections on Twitter, it's like, that's it? Like, that's all they got? Like, what did you want to do? Send him to Guantanamo Bay for making a prank call to Shador Sanders? Like, give me a break, dude.
I mean, it's
You should be
just.
happy that the fine was that big.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a dumb college kid doing something stupid. I mean, like, what'd you guys want him to do? Like I saw like a bunch of comments like, oh, like what's gonna be his punishment? It's like what do you want him to do, man? Like, get sent to jail for a prank call? I don't understand these people who just want to complain constantly about this. But I think you and I both agree. I think we're personally tired of seeing it. We're tired of talking about it, and let's get ready for football this year, which I am very excited for as a Falcons fan. I can't believe
Very
I'm saying
excited.
that.
First time in a while, but yeah, very excited. I was excited last year for Kirk because I thought there was still some more juice left. And then he got hurt and didn't disclose the injury to the team. So I was like, okay, this guy stinks. Like, get him out. But that's a funny exercise I wanted to do before we move on here. What would your dad do to you if you costed him $100,000?
That is probably something that I cannot say on this program.
Yeah, mine would be with Guantanamo Bay right there. I would be sent to Guantanamo Bay immediately and
just
had to
to
repay $200,000.
just to put it lightly, I probably would not have been here.
Yeah, same. All right, we can move on here to some Georgia basketball news here. The Mike White's kind of been cooking in the portal this week. These are both earlier in the week. We got two new guards to kind of take over for what we lost in Silas Demery. Smurf Millender from UTSA and Jordan Ross, who is a starter last year for St. Mary's, not Mount St. Mary's, like from where we got our transfers from last year. The real St. Mary's. So both of these guys were starters for tournament teams. They call Smurf Smurf because he's pretty short, 5'11", but he shoots the leather off the ball. And then Jordan Ross is more of your Silas Demery archetype point guard. He's a big lefty point guard. Started all 35 games for St. Mary's last year. That's really all I need to know. Like, sign me up.
Oh yeah, you definitely want a guy in the transfer portal who's really durable and can play a lot of the games. I mean, what you said right there is a huge bonus to have a guy who's hardly ever injured, can play almost every single game, can we can depend on him. But my challenge to the UGA students next year, dress up as Smurfs and then keep holding up the blue canes in the student section, man.
Dude, Smurf and Blue as a backcourt combo is going to do numbers in the Athens fraternities, dude. That's going to do numbers.
Man, I loved watching games at home and seeing all the students holding up the blue canes. I thought that
Yeah.
was just
And then
hilarious.
just like the things with a giant head on them, and it's just Blue Paint, who's not the most visually attractive person in the world. Not saying that I am, but like, dude, he's just kind of unfortunate looking. Though that paired with the blue cane, paired with like, give me a guy who like paints his face blue or does like the blue body paint and he's wearing a Smurf hat and a Smurf jersey. I think that would get an absolute arousal out of the crowd. That would be hilarious.
Talking about the players for a few seconds. These two guys are gonna be huge additions to our team next year. Like you said, I think Mike White has really been cooking in the transfer portal, and we got a really good class coming in next year. So I am fully expecting to go back to March next year. And now the goal is to win a game in March. Obviously the goal this year was to make the tournament. We
That was
ran into
clearly the goal of the team too. As soon as we made the tournament, they were like, all right, we're checked out.
Yeah,
Like, we got blown up by 30 to Gonzaga.
I mean, to be fair to them, I thought Gonzaga was severely underseeded. They just ran into an absolute juggernaut of a basketball program. So, I would have thought it would have been closer, but I can't really get angry because it was a successful season last year. I mean, made March Madness in over 10 years, so I would say that was a good year, but. Jordan Ross, he's essentially going to be the Demery replacement. I mean, he's a 6'3" guard. He averaged 8 points, 3 rebounds, two assists, and shot 38% from the field, which I'll take all day as a backup, which I'm just going to assume that Jeremiah Wilkinson's going to be the starter next year. Just going off his last 5 games, he scored 15 points against Vandy in the first round in the tournament, which I mean hell, I would assume he was a starter last year, so I'll take that any day. Him coming off the bench, and then Smurf, UTSA didn't make March Madness last year, but I'm just looking at his last 5 games, 24, 20, 16, 25, 21. I will take that all day. He averaged 15 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, shot 44%, and he almost shot 44% from three, which, if that tells you anything, it tells you that that man is a sharp shooter, which we have been missing, which, it's always been a huge, I guess, huge concern for Georgia. I mean, I love Blue Kane, but we need some more shooters on this team, and I think Mike White cooked with this transfer addition. Granted, it is the AAC, so we can see what he does against higher level competition, but you know, I love these two pickups. I think they're going to be solid depth pieces for us next year, and I am once again looking forward to another basketball season come wintertime next year.
I am too. I will be curious to see how we use all these transfer guards because I think we've gotten like three or four with Wilkinson and Justin Bailey, along with Smurf and Jordan Ross. I'm really curious to see how we're going to use all these players. I feel like we can kind of pencil in Smurf as being that sixth man. He's going to be coming off the bench, sharpshooter, knows his role, does it really well. Like you said, 44% from three is kind of unreal. And then I feel like Jordan Ross, would you, if you were at St. Mary's as a starting guard last year, would you transfer to be a backup at a football school?
See, that's a tough one because I definitely think, I mean, if you look at, you know, I mean, I'm just gonna use DeShane Montgomery as an example. I mean, granted, he didn't really have the best year last year, but I mean, going from, you know, Mount St. Mary's to Georgia, I think definitely could, or I think going from a small school to a bigger school is definitely a lot in what goes to a transfer's mind. I mean, easily perfect example is Noah Thomason came from, I think it was Niagara to Georgia, and he had a really good year for us. So I definitely think, you know, going from, you know, St. Mary's, which is known as more of a basketball school, to, you know, Georgia, who hasn't been known as a basketball school for, I mean, for a while. I mean, it's,
Forever,
yeah, I
like
mean,
ever.
hey, but Georgia did beat Michael Jordan in,
Since Dominique, yeah.
yeah. But, I think, I guess another thing, like in recruiting tactics, I guess, is he could definitely see like what we are building as a program. I mean, I think Mike White is a really good recruiter. He definitely does a lot of work in the transfer portal, and but I just think his only issue is really game planning. But I definitely,
In-game coaching.
yeah. But I definitely see why Jordan Ross wanted to come to Georgia. I mean, again, I don't follow St. Mary's that much, so I don't really know what their recruiting, what the recruiting class is next year. Maybe they have a dude who's gonna start over him. I really don't know. So, again, that could also be a factor. And again, the huge factor could also just be potentially an NIL deal, which for Jordan Ross, I don't really think that was probably the main caveat, but I don't know. We don't know, so not really basketball. Like for I guess like mid-level players, that's not really, I guess, like put out there if it was
Yeah.
if like how much they make or they're gonna make an NIL. So that could have been a factor. But I think if you look at it, I mean, I think there's multiple factors as to why Jordan Ross wanted to come to Athens.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, I would go ahead and pencil Jordan Ross in as that starting point guard alongside with Blue Kane. I just don't think you're the starting point guard all year for a five seed in March Madness. And then you transfer to a quote unquote lesser school to get less playing time. I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, he's your typical Mike White guard. St. Mary's was known for their defense for the past couple years, and that's what Mike White's known for. We all know his inability to call plays, whether it be inbounding the ball or drawing up, really needing a bucket. So to me, he just screams like Mike White point guard. Big, tall, athletic, gonna be really good at defense. And then Smurf definitely gonna be that sharpshooter off the bench. But I mean, I like the sound of that with Jordan Ross starting alongside Blue Kane. And then Kanan Ketching's gonna be in there as well. Samto, Dylan James, any one of those guys you can just mix in there. We might have a good basketball team next year.
And don't forget Dominique's son is coming this year too.
That's right, Jacob
So
Wilkins.
I don't know how much he's gonna play if they're just gonna let him rest, but I guess you could look at Asa Newell. I mean, he was a freshman who started, so
Yeah.
He could start. I don't really know what Mike White's plan is, but I mean, if you're that highly regarded as a freshman, I think you start day one.
Yep, I agree with you on that one. All right, so now we're going to go ahead and look at this article that I saw. This was just recently, like this morning, yesterday. Texas is paying somewhere between $35 to $40 million just this year for their 2025 college football roster. I mean, regulations cannot come fast enough. This is absurd. We saw it happen last year with Ohio State. They were reported somewhere between like 22 and 25 million on their 2024 roster. You know, some of those big time transfers that they got in, like Will Howard, Quinshon Judkins, Caleb Downs. Like Texas is clearly trying to do the same thing, but they're like, we're gonna double that number. I don't think they're gonna have as good of a team as the national champion Buckeyes did last year. A lot of that obviously is going to ride on Arch, as I'm assuming a good sum of this money is also riding on Arch. I mean, I've seen him anywhere between like 8 to 10 NIL, $8 to $10 million NIL valuations, whether that be for just 1 year or for the rest of his college career. Don't really know. Honestly, don't really care. I don't think he's gonna come out to the NFL after just 1 year of starting. From everything that we've seen, from like all the Mannings playing every year of college eligibility that they had, to like, I mean, even people like Carson Beck opting to stay in college for another year because seemingly he didn't have enough starting experience. He had like a year and a half solid starting experience, and I just don't think he comes out. And Texas is taking that L to Georgia this year. I know. We're going to continue to own them. We play them in Athens this year, later on in the year. So it's going to be an even bigger game. It's going to mean more. And then I wouldn't be surprised if we play them again in the SC Championship game, just like last year.
Oh man, I am so excited for that game in Athens. I will personally be in attendance in that game, so I cannot wait. Cannot wait. The Georgia defense had both Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning fighting for their lives on the sideline, so it's going to be interesting to see how Arch handles, walking into a standing room only Sanford Stadium with all that crowd noise. So I'm really excited about that. But in terms of the NIL, it's like you said, the settlement cannot get approved any longer. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that a single team is paying $35 to $40 million in NIL money for basically for the whole roster next year. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if you would have told me that they would have spent that through all of their sports, then I would have been like, I mean, okay. I mean, you're spreading the wealth, but I mean, it's one singular team is getting all that money is absolutely ridiculous. And the Texas and especially Texas A&M boosters, they're loaded with cash. So
Even
I,
Texas Tech, dude.
yeah, all the Texas schools, they have a really just insane boosters who will pay so much money for NIL. I mean, that's literally the only reason why I'm drawing a blank. The defensive tackle who is down from us to the number one defensive tackle. I keep forgetting his name.
Oh, God.
Well, besides the point, it came out that he literally went to Texas because of NIL. And that's just everything that's wrong with college sports is, it doesn't matter how good you are, it doesn't matter how or what the school, it
Justice
all
Terry.
Justice Terry, it got reported or he it got reported that he went to Texas just strictly because of NIL, which is again, it's everything that's wrong with the current landscape of college football. I mean, these kids, they could go to, I mean, Baylor if they offered the biggest NIL package for them rather than a school like Georgia where you're going to get developed a lot better and go to the NFL. I mean, go look at Kirby's track record. He has more guys going into the NFL than he has losses at Georgia. I mean, that's just insane. But like you said, regulations cannot come soon enough. There needs to be a cap. I hope that the NCAA settlement gets approved here in the next couple of months, because there needs to be an equal level playing ground for all these teams, all these Power Five teams in college football. Because you're gonna have your Ohio States who are gonna pay all that money. You're gonna have the Texases. You're gonna have the Texas A&M. You're gonna have Georgia. All these big schools. With the bigger boosters, they're going to pay a lot more and get a lot of the big guys. Like, again, like you said, perfect example, Ohio State, and they won the Natty because of that. I just think it's unfair to a lot of these teams who don't have, the big boosters like the Texas schools. So I definitely think the regulations cannot come soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's not saying we're not a part of the problem, because we definitely are, and we definitely can be, considering we had a nice transfer class as well. I mean, Noah Thomas and Zachariah Branch weren't free, and I can promise you they weren't cheap either. But it's just good for the love of the game, good for the good of the game, just to level the playing field as much as humanly possible. I mean, who knows? It's probably just going to go back to how it was in pre-NIL era, which is just like under the table, bag dropping, cash. I mean,
Tennessee.
it's fine. At least it's just like not talked about throughout everyone. It's like it is what it is. Like, if you're willing to make the risk to do it, you're going to get rewarded by getting the players. I mean, just talk to Nick Saban about that. So we got Georgia baseball coming up. A series starts tomorrow, and we finally seemingly get a weekend off. It's like the first time we haven't played a ranked opponent in like a month or two. And we're playing at Missouri. That's the only thing that's sketchy, is we're not necessarily good on the road, but I don't know if really any college baseball team is, because when you look at home versus road splits, like they're all crazy lopsided for home games. But we're playing at Missouri. Record right now, after beating Kennesaw State on Tuesday, is 36-11, and Missouri is 13-31. They are winless in the SEC. There's clear cut just the worst team in the SEC. There's like a large gap between them and second worst, which I don't even know who that could be, because it seems like everyone in the SEC is amazing at baseball. But yeah, 36-11. Looks like we're still heavily in line to get that one of those top eight national seeds, which would be really, really nice. I know in the RPI, whatever that means, but we're number one in the RPI still somehow, after losing series versus Vanderbilt, Texas, and then we finally took a series this past weekend versus Oklahoma, which is nice. And then for a midweek game too, Kennesaw State's no slouch. They're, I think, 24th in the RPI, and then like top 25 in strength of schedule as well. So we beat them 9-2 on Tuesday. It was the second time we played them this year. They had kind of a home and home. We played at Kennesaw State early on in the year before SEC play. And I remember that game being like insanely fun to watch. I don't remember the final score, but we were down big, and then came all the way back and won in like the ninth inning. But yeah, baseball team looking up so far. So after this, hopefully sweep of Missouri would be 39-11. I think that would put us up to like 17 or 18 wins in the SEC. That's all looking pretty good for a top eight national seed.
For sure. I'm old enough to remember when SEC was bad in baseball and basketball, so it's really cool to see just, all these teams are getting just insane in baseball and basketball, because I mean, SEC is mainly known for football. I have a funny story about KSU. So before I went to Georgia, I went to Kennesaw State, and Georgia was playing baseball at KSU while I was there. And my first allegiance is UGA. So I went to the game and I sat in the KSU student section wearing a Georgia shirt. Everyone was booing the hell out of me. It was so funny. And I think Georgia ended up like just beating the snot out of them. So it was funny. But no, good win. Needed a win against KSU in the midweek. Like you said, KSU's no slouch. I mean, they're definitely a good baseball program, so real solid win for them. They finally get a SEC series win against Oklahoma last weekend, and then obviously this weekend with Missouri, who I am pretty sure is the worst team in baseball in SEC. So I think I'm not gonna jinx them, so I don't want to call it a full sweep. So
Sweep would be nice.
sweep would be nice, but I don't want to put that jinx in the air, because I think this is a very if we want to keep that the regional, we need to beat teams like Missouri and sweep them. So I'm just gonna say, just so I don't jinx them, I am expecting at least a series win. So definitely will be fun to watch this weekend. Dogs need to start winning some games to lock down that regional for the College World Series. So, should be a fun weekend.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that one. Looking forward to watching those. Like to see the bats just come alive, just hit so many home runs that we don't know what to do with ourselves. That's really what I look for. The pitching's gonna give up something. They're gonna give up some runs. So
That
just hit some
going
bombs.
into, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but going into the World Series, that's gonna be the Achilles heel for UGA, is how does their pitching step up? We're obviously gonna need our pitching to step up in the College World Series if we want any way of making it to Omaha. So the bats are gonna do their thing. I'm not worried about the offense. Obviously the big issue is the starting pitching and the bullpen, which it some games it's some of the best, and some of the games it is some of the worst I've ever seen. But that's going to be a huge factor in the Dogs making Omaha this year, is how well does their pitching show up in those big games.
Yeah, throwing strikes is clearly not as easy as it looks on TV because
Clearly.
the main part of our issue is just walking batters. Like, all of our pitchers have so many walks. Like, we'll get a bunch of strikeouts too, but it's like we just walk like every other batter, it seems like. Makes the games really, really long and really, really tough to watch. Speaking of which, we have a Braves Dodgers series this weekend. Dodgers coming into town, Atlanta, for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just kind of wanted to review these pitching matchups with you. So we'll start on Friday. So I'm looking at my screen right here. It says we got Yoshinobu Yamamoto versus Grant Holmes. So what do we think about that one? I honestly really like what I've seen from Grant Holmes thus far this year. It says Yamamoto's 3-2 with a 1.06 ERA, which is obviously very good.
Should be a interesting matchup. I think Yoshinobu is due for one bad game, and I think with how hot the Braves offense has been besides yesterday's game, I think that they'll get to Yamamoto. I mean, he obviously one of the better signings last year. From the Dodgers, other than Shohei. So I think the Braves, their offense is gonna make Yamamoto have a bad game. I think he's due for one. And then Grant Holmes, I think in the role that he has been given, I think Grant Holmes has done a really solid job. There's been some games where he's I guess you could say, like, kind of let slip. I think he pitched the last time the Braves played the Dodgers.
He did too.
Yes, he Okay, he got destroyed in that game. But but I think, you know, facing a team that you've already pitched against, I think it's gonna work in his factor. I'm not really expecting a 7 innings scoreless, seven Ks. I'm thinking probably 6 innings. I'm gonna say like 6 hits, 2 runs, and like 4 strikeouts. I think that's gonna be the line for
I'd
Grant
be
Holmes.
really impressed with that.
And I think that's gonna be the line for Grant Holmes, and then I think the bullpen is going to dominate. I think the bullpen has been pretty good these past few weeks, especially in that Arizona series. I think with the Dodgers, I think their lineup is obviously amazing, but I think it's really top heavy. So I think if you limit, Ohtani, Freddie, Mookie, Teoscar, I think you could easily win this game. But again, you never know. I mean, the Braves did that in when they played them the last time, and the bomb in the lineup destroyed them. So, I mean, I guess really when you play the Dodgers, it's kind of a pick your own poison, which is very hard.
They're definitely probably the best team on paper that we've ever seen. Still think baseball needs a salary cap, but that's just me.
Yes, I agree.
Next pitching matchup we got for Saturday would be Roky Sasaki versus Schwellenbach. So I mean, the Dodgers just keep rolling in the Japs like it's nobody's business. They just got unlimited supply of these guys, and it's obviously because LA is relatively close to Japan, at least as close that you can get in the US. And they're all probably friends, and they all just probably talk to each other in Japanese. And it's probably really cool. It's kind of like what Braves do with the Central American Hispanic population. I think that's pretty funny how, like, compared to regionally where the teams are based, like the makeup of the team. But Spencer Schwellenbach had one of the best starts like we've seen from a Braves pitcher throughout his first couple games. He's kind of fallen a little bit behind. Obviously, still producing at a high level. He's 1-2 with a 2.87 ERA, and then Roky Sasaki is 0-1 with a 3.55.
Yeah, I think this is the same situation with Yamamoto last year with that's happening to Roky. I think he's trying to warm up to MLB speed. I mean, obviously, and playing in MLB in Japan are two different things. So I remember when Yoshinobu was struggling a lot last year to find his rhythm, and then he started to tear it up. So I think it's best that the Braves get him now rather than August or September, which obviously he's gonna have a lot of game time, and I think he's gonna be absolutely dominant. But with that being said, I really hope that the Braves light Roky up. I'm not really, I'm gonna say I'm not really big fan of this dude, but I just think the
I want
way
to
that
see him
he
cry again, dude.
But I think the way that him and his agent went about the free agency period was kind of, I wouldn't say scummy, but I mean, well, first of all, coming out and say that your client doesn't want to play for a big market team is just the biggest lie I've ever heard. I mean, it didn't take a guess to know where he was going. I mean, he was the most obvious Dodger of all time when he got posted. But and then I read an article today that, he said that if the Dodgers added like Japanese like toilets in the clubhouse, he would have signed with them or just something weird. But I'm not joking. You could literally look this up. It's all over Twitter. But I think dude's gonna be a stud once he gets a lot more pitching time in the majors. But for now, I want the Braves offense to annihilate him. So this is really this is the pitching matchup I'm most excited about, because I think Schwellenbach's a little bit better than Roky. Obviously, I mean that's not really a hot take, but this is definitely the more intriguing matchup pitching wise. So
I agree with you on that one. Next one, Sunday, the series finale.
not a
You already
fan
know
of
where I'm
this
going with
option.
this. It's funny. We got Dustin May versus your favorite player that wears these colors, Bryce Elder. He's my favorite player too. No, I'm kidding. I absolutely despise this man. Don't know how he's still employed by the Atlanta Braves. Probably because he's cheap and we're cheap. That's really it. Bryce Elder, the 1-1 with a 5.33 ERA this year. Dustin May is 1-1 with a 3.95. Dustin May kind of reminds me of the Dodgers version of Grant Holmes. I don't know if it's just the hair, but it's kind of like the role that they play too. They're kind of like that starter that no one really thinks about. Also played a little bit in the bullpen, or can play a little bit in the bullpen. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Bryce Elder gives up 5 or 6 runs in 3 innings with 4 walks, and we get slaughtered.
Yeah. God help that man when he takes him out on Sunday night, because the Dodgers are going to eat that dude alive. You know, I'm sure Bryce Elder's a nice guy, but please just get off my team. I cannot watch him anymore. I am tired of it.
Dude throws 86-mile-an-hour meatballs right down the middle, and it's like, whenever they hit a home run on him, I'm like, dude, I probably could have at least made contact with that.
Yeah, this is the issue that I've had with, you know, Liberty Media for as long as they've bought the Braves. They just bring back these just mid-terrible players because they're cheap. And Bryce Elder's the number one person. The only reason why he's back, I think the Braves think that he's just going to revitalize his career, like how he somehow went to an All-Star game 2 years ago, which is the biggest, like, Mickey Mouse season I've ever seen of a pitcher.
Dude, he played like the Marlins twice, the Nationals twice. Like, he got so, so, so lucky with his pitching matchups.
Yeah, like, give me a damn break. And same thing with Arcia. That dude is not an All-Star. He's awful. I mean, I'm not gonna try and bash Nick Allen, because I think he's been absolute beast.
He's been better than Arcia.
Yeah. He's been a beast, but man, you gotta look yourself in the mirror if you're getting replaced by Nick Allen. You gotta look yourself in the mirror. But you know, I could go on a Liberty Media rant for hours, but Bryce Elder, I cannot wait for the day that this man finally gets off my baseball team. I am so tired of watching him pitch. I am so tired of it. I mean, every time he pitches, it's pretty much a guaranteed loss unless you play the damn Rockies, which he did, and he gave up like 3 runs or something to the Rockies. Yeah. Rockies. But you know, Dustin May's been an interesting pitcher. I want to say he first started off as a pen reliever and then made the transition to a starter, but you know, one of the weirdest injuries I've ever seen in a player is that he got his esophagus torn open by a piece of lettuce, and he got or he was out for, I want to say, like 1 to 1.5 years of baseball. It's like the weirdest injury I've ever seen, like, in sports. It's crazy. You and I wish I was lying. You could look this up in an article.
I'm gonna have
to
look that one up.
Yeah, I bet that was painful, but you know, I think Dustin May, once he's healthy, I think he's a really solid starter for the Dodgers. I mean, he throws gas. He could definitely mix you up with some breaking pitches. You know, curveball, slider. You know, he made his first start back on MLB in quite some time against the Braves and dominated them. But granted, that was when the Braves were on that 0-7 stretch. But if you couldn't tell already, this is probably the least excited for that I am in this pitching matchup for this week, and I think if I wanted to put money on it, I would say that Dustin May dominates the Braves again, and Elder gives up like 7 runs. So definitely need to win the first two, because I think, like you said, I think we're gonna get slaughtered on Sunday night. I almost said Sunday night football. Sunday night baseball.
Yeah, that is, love that. Bryce Elder pitching a nationally televised game.
God help us.
Not good. Yeah, I don't like the pitching matchups really at all for this series. Maybe only Saturday is the one that favors us, I think.
I think, think
Friday could be
Yamamoto.
okay.
I think Yamamoto Granholm should be interesting because I think, like I said, I think Yoshinobu's due for a bad game. I don't know if he's leading Major League Baseball, but I know he's top five in ERA right now.
106, yeah.
He is
Very good.
disgusting.
Yeah.
Huge fan of Yoshinobu. I love watching his starts.
Yeah, he's a good one. All right, well, that's all we got on the plate for today. I think that's going to do it for episode 9 of the Gridiron Pulse. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, share with your friends, repost us on social media. See ya.
See y'all.